All right, so buckle up, everybody, because today we are diving deep, deep into the Book of Malachi.
Ooh, deep dive.
Yeah.
I like it.
It's the last book in that collection we call the Book of the Twelve.
The Minor Prophets, right?
Exactly, the Minor Prophets.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you think of the whole Old Testament as like a library, this section is kind of like that intense drama aisle.
Oh, I like that.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
And Malachi, oh boy. Malachi.
Oh, he brings it.
He throws some serious shade on that whole happily ever after vibe you might think would happen after God's people could come back from exile.
Yeah. You know, you'd think coming home after all those decades in Babylon, like, it'd be a big party, you know? Yeah. Everyone's, like, spiritually renewed, right?
Right, exactly.
But Malachi, oh, he's painting a different picture.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It's filled with tension, broken promises, and like a ton of arguing between God and his people.
Seriously?
Yeah, it's like they came back home, but their hearts are still kind of lost out there in the desert.
So, like, walk me through this. Why is it so hard for them to reconnect with God? I mean, they literally just got rescued. You'd think they'd be just like, so grateful, you know, overflowing with gratitude, just eager to please.
Right. That's what's so fascinating about Malachi. You know, it picks up on this recurring theme that we see in the prophets.
Okay.
Especially in Hosea, where that whole relationship between God and Israel, it's depicted as like a troubled marriage.
Oh, interesting.
But instead of like this joyful reunion, right? Yeah. It's like we're seeing a couple that's like on the verge of a very messy divorce.
Oof. So it's like coming home to a passive-aggressive welcome mat or something.
Right.
That's rough. But seriously, what's causing this disconnect? Is it just like post-exile stress, or is it something deeper?
Well, think about it this way, okay?
Okay.
So imagine you're finally back in Jerusalem after decades.
The decades.
Right. You're rebuilding the temple. You're trying to like piece your lives back together. Yeah. And suddenly, bam, Ezra shows up.
Oh, Ezra.
Right. And he shakes things up with all these strict religious reforms.
Oh, man.
It's a lot to process.
Yeah, I can see that.
Even for the most devout, you know.
I can see how that would kind of throw a wrench in the gears.
Right.
It's like, oh, we just unpacked and now we got to redecorate the whole place.
Exactly.
But even with all that, why are they taking it out on God?
Yeah.
Is that like misplaced anger, or is it something like way more complex?
You know, it's more like this, like, deep-seated disillusionment.
Oh, yeah.
They're looking around, they're seeing all this injustice and hardship, and I think they're wondering, like, if God is so powerful and loving, why are we still struggling?
Yeah.
You know, their faith has been tested, like, big time in the fires of exile.
Yeah.
And now I think they're kind of questioning everything.
So their doubt is, like, pushing them away from God.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that's like a tough cycle to break.
It is.
Like, they need a serious intervention.
They do.
Is that where Malachi steps in?
Exactly. Malachi doesn't hold back, like, at all. He confronts all their doubts, like, head on.
Oh, wow.
And he uses these really powerful disputation speeches.
What's that?
So, it's where God and the people are basically arguing.
Oh, really?
Like, imagine a couple in a heated therapy session.
You know? Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. So no more passive aggressiveness. It's straight up confrontation.
Uh-huh.
I like it. Okay. So what's the first thing they clash over?
So the first dispute is all about God's love.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So imagine this. God says, I have loved you. And the people are basically like, prove it.
Oh, wow.
Right. They're pointing at all their suffering and questioning if his love's even real.
So there's like a major communication breakdown.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, how does God even respond to that?
He points to their survival, like their very existence as a nation.
Okay.
As proof of his love.
Okay.
And he reminds them about the destruction of Edom.
Edom, right.
Yeah, that neighboring nation that opposed them all the time. Yeah. It's like he's saying, look, you're still here. You're still standing. That's my love in action.
That's a really good point.
Right.
Sometimes just surviving is a testament to like something bigger than ourselves.
Exactly.
But clearly that's not enough to convince them because they move on to another point.
They do.
Corrupt worship.
Yes.
What's happening there?
So on the surface, it seems like they're going through all the motions of these religious rituals.
Right.
You know, they're offering sacrifices, but like with half-hearted effort.
So they're like phoning it in, basically.
Totally.
Like checking off those, like, all right, God, there's my slightly bruised apple. We good?
Yeah, like imagine you're bringing a king a gift of stale bread.
Oh, that's insulting.
Right.
Yeah.
It's insulting. Like their actions are speaking way louder than their words.
So it's like totally the opposite of that genuine devotion and like obedience that God actually wants.
Right.
Oh, man.
And to make things even worse, you know, their everyday lives are full of injustice,
right,
which completely contradicts their supposed piety.
Oh, that's like a double standard.
It is, big time.
So they're playing the part, but not walking the walk.
Exactly.
I mean, no wonder God's not impressed.
No.
And so this hypocrisy, this leads us to the next big dispute.
It does.
The one about marriage, right?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
And this is where that whole broken marriage metaphor gets, like, even more intense.
Okay.
We see two major issues.
Okay.
Number one, intermarriage.
Okay.
With those who worship other gods.
Right.
And number two, this growing trend of divorcing the wives of their youth.
Seriously.
Uh-huh. Likely for, like, opportunistic reasons.
So not only are they straying from God.
Right.
They're breaking, like, sacred vows.
Yeah.
And they're potentially exploiting other people in the process.
Uh-huh.
It's like a recipe for disaster.
It is on every level.
Every level.
Oh, man.
And it really highlights this fundamental disconnect.
Between their actions and God's intentions for their lives.
Right.
Especially when it comes to, like, the sanctity of marriage.
Right. Okay, so this is getting pretty heavy.
Yeah.
We've got, like, questionable sacrifices, a double standard when it comes to living out their faith, and now a serious marriage crisis.
Yeah.
Seems like there's a pattern here.
What do you see?
They're, like, pushing God away with every choice they make.
Yeah, you're picking up on a crucial theme in Malachi, this idea of wearying God.
Oh, okay.
With their doubts and their disobedience.
So it's not just disappointing him.
Yeah.
It's like they're actively exhausting him.
Yes.
With their negativity.
Yeah, you're getting it.
Whoa. Okay, I'm starting to understand why Malachi is considered such a challenging book.
It is.
It really cuts to the core of, like, our whole relationship with God.
For sure.
Okay, and that brings us to our next point of contention.
Okay.
The one that's probably the most relevant for us, even today. Tithing.
The big T word.
Yeah. Yeah. But before we, like, dive into all that, I think we need to pause here for a moment, and we'll pick this back up in part two.
Sounds good.
All right, we'll see you then. Okay, so welcome back. Last time, things were getting, I don't know, a little bit bleak, maybe, between God and his people.
Oh, yeah.
It's like,
yeah,
they're questioning his love. Their worship seems kind of superficial.
Right.
Their marriages are falling apart. And then to top it all off,
yeah,
they're complaining about tithing.
Ooh, that's a big one.
Yeah, it's like, come on, you're really going to add fuel to that fire.
Right. It's like they're throwing everything they can at God in this book.
I know.
But that tithing dispute, that one's particularly interesting.
Really? Why is that?
Because it touches on this idea of prosperity that God promised Israel under the Mosaic Law.
Right, right. So it's not just about money.
No, no, not at all.
It's about that whole covenant between God and his people.
Exactly.
Can you, like, break that down for us a little bit? Because I think a lot of people, myself included, could use a little refresher on Covenant 101.
Absolutely. Think of a covenant like a binding agreement.
Oh, yeah.
A sacred promise between two parties.
Okay.
In this case, God and Israel.
Right.
And part of that agreement was if Israel obeyed God's laws, including tithing,
uh-huh,
then they would be blessed abundantly.
Yeah.
Not just spiritually, but materially, too.
So it's like a mutual benefit kind of thing.
You could say that.
But it sounds like the Israelites are kind of accusing God of not holding up his end of the bargain.
Exactly.
Oh, wow.
They're looking around, seeing hardship and injustice, and they're basically saying, hey, we're holding up our end by tithing. Where are all these blessings you promised?
So they're focused on the material benefits,
uh-huh,
but missing the bigger picture.
Big time.
Okay, so it's like they're treating God like a cosmic vending machine.
Yes.
Put in my 10%, now give me my prize.
Exactly.
Yeah. I can see why that would, like, really rub God the wrong way.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah, definitely not the, you know, the heart of generosity and gratitude that tithing should be about.
Right. And God calls them out on it.
What does he say?
He says, you're robbing me by withholding your tithes.
Oh, wow.
And remember, you know, these tithes, they supported the Levites, the temple.
Oh, right.
So it wasn't just about money.
Right.
It was about, like, supporting the very structure of their faith.
So it was about faithfulness.
Yes.
And prioritizing God
mm-hmm.
more than just like a financial transaction.
Absolutely.
Okay. But I got to admit, that whole prosperity angle can be a little bit confusing.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, there are people today who preach that, like, if you just give enough money, God will bless you with wealth and success.
That's where it's so important to understand the historical context.
Yeah.
Those promises of material abundance were specific to the Mosaic Covenant.
Okay.
And the Israelites' unique relationship with the land.
Okay.
It's not a formula for getting rich quick, and Malachi is definitely not endorsing a prosperity gospel.
Okay, so how should we approach tithing today then?
Yeah.
Is it still relevant or is it like an outdated concept?
I think the principle behind tithing, that idea of giving back to God a portion of what he's given us,
uh-huh.
it's still very relevant.
Okay.
It's a way to show gratitude, to support our faith communities, and to acknowledge that everything we have ultimately belongs to God.
It's about aligning our hearts with God.
Yes.
Not just our wallets.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've seen God's people challenge him on his love, on their worship, on their commitment to marriage, and now on his promises about tithing.
Yeah, it's a lot.
It's a lot. It feels like this downward spiral of doubt and disillusionment.
It's a tough book.
Is there, like, any light at the end of this tunnel?
You're right. It is a pretty bleak picture so far.
Yeah.
But even amidst all this negativity,
yeah.
there's a small glimmer of hope.
Okay, tell me more.
So after Malachi delivers his message,
uh-huh.
we get this brief but powerful little story tucked away in the text.
Ooh, I love a good plot twist.
Right.
Tell me about this glimmer of hope.
It's about a small group of people who, despite all the cynicism and apathy, they still feared the Lord.
Okay.
And they took his words to heart.
Good for them.
They started talking to each other, encouraging each other.
Right.
And guess what?
Right.
God noticed.
He did?
He took note of their faithfulness.
So even in this, like, climate of negativity, there's this little group that's clinging to God.
Yes.
Choosing faith over doubt.
Exactly.
And God sees them.
He sees them.
He acknowledges their effort.
He does. And not only does he see them.
Yeah.
He records their names in a book of remembrance.
Wow. So even the smallest acts of faithfulness don't go unnoticed by God.
They don't.
Wow. That is encouraging.
It is.
For, you know, for those of us who sometimes feel like our efforts are going unseen.
For sure.
Yeah, and it gets even better.
It does.
Yeah, because God promises that when he brings his final judgment,
huh.
the distinction between the righteous and the wicked will be clear.
Oh, wow.
And those who have served him faithfully will be vindicated.
That's powerful.
So even though things seem bleak right now, there's this promise of ultimate restoration down the road.
That's the hope.
Yeah, it's a good reminder that God's story is so much bigger than our current circumstances.
It is. And that brings us to Malachi's concluding message.
Okay.
Which points beyond these present struggles to a future hope.
Okay.
He prophesies that God will send a messenger.
Okay.
A figure like Elijah.
Okay.
To prepare the way for the Lord's final return.
Wait, haven't we heard this before? Didn't another prophet talk about a messenger coming to prepare the way?
You're thinking of Zechariah.
Zechariah, that's it.
Yes, he also prophesied about a messenger.
Right.
But as we've seen in Malachi, that initial return from exile, it wasn't the complete fulfillment of God's promises. It's like there's one more piece of the puzzle missing.
And that piece is this Elijah figure, this like mysterious messenger who will set things right.
Exactly.
Okay.
And if we connect this to the New Testament,
yeah.
we see John the Baptist fulfilling this role.
Oh, wow.
Preparing the way for Jesus.
Okay, so even though Malachi ends with a lot of unresolved tension,
yeah,
it points forward to this future hope.
Yes.
This ultimate restoration that's going to come through Jesus.
That's the good news.
That is good news. It's amazing how Malachi is like a fitting conclusion to the Book of the 12.
Yes.
It reminds us that even when things feel messy and uncertain,
uh-huh.
God is still working.
He's
still faithful to his promises.
Absolutely.
And he's still calling us to be part of that story of redemption.
He is.
Even when it's not always pretty or easy.
That's right.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here.
We have.
From broken covenants to corrupt worship to, thankfully, glimmers of hope.
Yeah, it's a lot to unpack.
I'm feeling the weight of this book, but I'm also sensing its relevance for us today.
It's definitely not light reading.
Yeah.
But you hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Malachi challenges us to examine our own relationship with God.
Okay.
To ask ourselves some tough questions about our motivations, our priorities, our level of commitment.
It's like Malachi's holding up a mirror,
yeah,
forcing us to get real with ourselves and with God.
A little self-reflection never hurt anyone.
That's true. But before we get too deep into that,
yeah,
I think we need to take another pause.
Okay.
We'll come back for part three.
Sounds good.
And we'll explore how Malachi's message speaks to our lives today.
Okay.
All right. See you then. All right. So welcome back to our deep dive into Malachi.
Yeah, it's been a journey, huh?
It really has.
Yeah.
I mean, we've explored the prophet's message, the historical context, all those spiritual struggles of the post-exilic community.
Right.
But now, let's bring it all home, you know?
Yeah.
We've uncovered, like, some seriously intense drama in this tiny little book.
It's a small but mighty book.
It really is.
Yeah.
Tucked away at the end of the Old Testament. So, like, what does it all mean for us today?
Right.
Why should we even care about these, like, ancient arguments and complaints?
Well, you know, what's fascinating to me is that Malachi, even though it's so brief and the tone can be pretty harsh sometimes.
Yeah.
It offers these, like, incredibly relevant insights for us, even thousands of years later.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It reveals this, like, human tendency to fall back into old patterns.
Okay.
To question God's goodness when things get tough.
Right.
Yeah. And to, like, lose sight of the bigger picture.
Yeah, it's easy to do that.
It is. It is. And just like those folks returning from exile, we can get so caught up in the, like, day-to-day struggles of life that we forget about the spiritual foundation we're supposed to be building on.
Like, we're so focused on unpacking boxes and redecorating after a move.
Right.
That we forget to nurture the relationships that really matter, you know?
Yeah, it's like we're going through the motions, but our hearts aren't really in it.
Yeah, exactly.
And that can manifest in so many ways.
How so? Well, you know, we might be offering God the equivalent of stale bread in our worship.
Just going through the motions, no real heart, no passion.
Right, just checking off the list.
Exactly. Or, you know,
yeah,
we might fall into that trap of comparing ourselves to others.
Oh, yeah.
You know, seeing those who seem to, like, get away with bad behavior while we're struggling to stay faithful.
Yeah.
And we start wondering, like, what's the point of all this?
Yeah, that sense of unfairness can be so discouraging.
It really can.
It's like, God, I'm trying here. Why does it seem like everyone else is getting ahead while I'm stuck in the slow lane?
Right. Makes you want to just, like, give up sometime.
It really does.
And Malachi acknowledges that struggle.
Does he?
Oh, yeah. He doesn't shy away from those raw emotions, the doubt, the disillusionment.
Right.
But he also reminds us that God sees everything.
Everything.
Even those smallest acts of faithfulness.
Wow.
And he promises to ultimately set things right.
So even when it feels like no one's noticing our efforts, like we're just, you know, spinning our wheels, God's keeping track.
He is. And it connects back to that powerful image of the Book of Remembrance.
Right, right.
Where God is recording the names of those who fear him and who encourage each other in their faith.
He's building a community of faithfulness.
He is, even in the midst of all that apathy and cynicism.
It's like he's creating a secret society of those who just refuse to give up on him.
I like that, yeah.
Who choose to trust and obey, even when it's hard.
Exactly. And that brings us to, I think, a really crucial challenge for each of us.
Okay.
Are we willing to be part of that faithful remnant?
Ooh, that's a good question.
Yeah. Are we actively choosing to trust God's goodness and faithfulness?
Even when we don't understand his plan.
Even when we don't understand his plan.
Those are tough questions.
They are.
It's so easy to get swept up in the negativity.
It is.
To let doubt and cynicism, like, just poison our hearts.
It's easier to get pulled in.
So how do we, like, combat that? How do we stay faithful when it feels like the world's falling apart around us?
Well, I think Malachi actually offers some really practical wisdom here.
Okay, I like practical.
Me too.
What do we do?
So first, we need to be honest with God about our doubts and our struggles.
Okay.
Like, don't try to pretend everything's okay when it's not.
Right.
Pour out your heart to him.
He can handle it.
He can handle it. Yeah. It's like that saying, fake it till you make it.
Right.
That doesn't apply to our relationship with God.
Authenticity is key.
Authenticity is key. Yes.
Okay. So be honest with God. What else?
Second, we need to surround ourselves with people who will encourage us in our faith.
Okay.
Find those friends, mentors, small groups, whoever it is, who will challenge you to grow, hold you accountable,
right,
and remind you of God's truth when you start to lose sight of it.
So it's like having a spiritual support system.
Exactly. Yeah, like a team of cheerleaders to help us through those tough seasons.
I like it.
And then finally,
okay,
we need to be intentional about cultivating a grateful heart.
Oh, that's a good one.
You know, when we focus on all the things we're lacking, it's so easy to become bitter and resentful.
It is, yeah.
But when we take time to appreciate the blessings in our lives,
yeah,
even the small ones,
right,
it shifts our perspective.
Totally.
And it helps us see God's hand at work, even in the midst of difficult circumstances.
So it's about choosing gratitude over grumbling.
Yes.
Focusing on what we have, not what we lack.
It's a simple shift.
It really is.
But it can make a world of difference.
A world of difference.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the key takeaways from Malachi.
What is?
It's not a book about earning God's favor,
okay,
or manipulating him for personal gain.
Right.
It's a call to genuine relationship.
Oh.
To humble surrender,
right,
and to unwavering trust in his goodness, even when we don't understand his ways.
It's a good reminder that we're not in this alone.
We're not.
God is with us every step of the way.
Every step.
Even when it feels like we're walking through fire.
He's there.
And just like he promised his people in Malachi, he's preparing the way for ultimate restoration.
He is.
For a future filled with hope and healing.
I love that. That's a beautiful way to sum it up.
And on that note, I think we've reached the end of our deep dive into Malachi.
Wow. Time flies when you're having fun, huh?
It really does. We hope you found this insightful, challenging, and maybe even a little bit encouraging.
Yeah, me too.
So thanks for joining us on this journey.
Yes, thank you.
We'll see you next time for another deep dive into the depths of knowledge and inspiration.